Blog Talk Radio.
Is your business protected against the threat of malicious litigation and frivolous lawsuits? Are you sinking company profits into marketing campaigns that do nothing to contribute to the growth of your business? Bottled Business Sense provides practical business perspectives that uniquely emphasize both legal and media marketing strategies to protect and ensure the longevity of your business. And whether you're trying to provide a startup business with some level of stability, or an established business with foolproof asset and estate protection, or simply attempting to get a better return for your business marketing dollars, Bill Bernard and Rick Muscoso will expose potential pitfalls to ensure the security and growth of your business, free from unwanted expense and the threat of litigation. You'll learn how to implement marketing and protection tools equal to those used by today's most successful corporations. Let's join Bill and Rick for today's Bottled Business Sense Show.
Well, good morning, everyone. Here we are again today, Tuesday at 10 a.m. on the Bottled Business Sense Show. I am Rick Muscoso with R2 Visual Studios. I am one of your co-hosts. I want to welcome everyone back to the show today. And on the other side, I have my other co-host, Mr. Bill Bernard. How are you doing there, Bill?
Doing great, Rick. Again, glad to be here with everyone. Another great day in Southern California. We're hoping our business owners are, as usual, prosperous, happy, healthy, protected. All of the good things that we try to help them with the exception of the health part. We can't do much about that, but we always we say a prayer every now and then for all of our listeners and viewers, and we hope life's treating you well out there. You know, the Bottled Business Sense Show, we've said many times, is here to try to be helpful. We don't get on and rattle off a lot of sports scores or talk about politics or any of that stuff. We try to have a more in-depth discussion to some extent concerning business issues, which would involve legal issues, which would involve marketing issues, something that'll help put that business in the bottle, protect it, and help it move along on the high seas, if you will, so it becomes highly prosperous and beneficial for all of our entrepreneurs out there.
That's right. You know, folks, Bill and I shape this show based on your feedback. And so if you ever have any feedback, want to be a guest on the show, or suggestions regarding future episodes, feel free to reach out to us at bottledbusinesssenseshow@gmail.com. You can also submit to be a guest on a future show. You can also reach out to us on Facebook and Google Plus, or even tweet into us on Twitter at @bbsenseshow. So, with that being said, let's get right into the topic of the day today. And that
well,
is,
there's a quick story.
Oh yeah,
story. There's a quick story
ahead.
I want to tell.
Oh, go ahead,
real quick, Rick. You know, I went in Costco for something totally unrelated to big screen TVs, but I did go in Costco. Whenever I'm in there, I always take a truck by the big screens because I'm fascinated by the new, you know, the new curved big screens and the new the Ultra HD, I guess it's called, and who knows what else will be coming out in the future. So I always take a look at them. Excuse me. And I'm standing there next to one of the Costco service people, and we start talking about the latest and the greatest in the big screen technology. You know, we start chatting and he asked me what I do and I told him, he said, well, you know, what you do, it's got to be pretty costly to get a trust estate planned and get it done, isn't it? And I said, no, you know, actually it depends on the size of your estate. It depends on what you want to accomplish and so forth and so on. I said, see one of those TVs up there that are going for $39.99? I said, a lot of people, and I've said this before on the show, a lot of people would rather come in and buy that than to get a basic trust for a small to standard estate, which costs a lot less than that. And he just smiled and he says, "Well, all I can tell you is we're doing a heck of a business in here." And I said, I don't doubt it. And you know, it just impresses upon me all the more that you know, we tend to go out and we get things that we want as opposed to what we need all, most times. And remember, you need the stuff we're going to tell you about for your business. And without the prosperous business, you're not going to be able to get the things you want. So it's a domino effect. Attend to the foundation of your business. Make sure you have the right protection in place and the right marketing in place. And believe me, you'll be able to go into Costco and buy several of those big screen TVs.
Yeah, that's right. It's all a matter of priority, right, Bill?
It is. It really is. So and without further ado, our show today has to do with a bit of a combination between the personal assets of a family and the business assets of a business owner. Again, we've talked about living trusts before, estate planning. We've talked about how important they are. But I don't know if everybody realizes what you need to do to fund your trust. Because if you get an estate plan done, and by the way, this is the topic of an article that just came out in the April 13th, 2015 edition of the Bottled Business Sense newsletter. Please go to Bottled Business Sense, not Bottled Business Sense Show, but bottledbusinesssense.com if you want to sign up for the newsletter. But in any event, this article was in the newsletter, and it was a guide, a helpful resource guide, short and sweet, as to how to fund various types of property into your trust. Because I don't know if people realize this, Rick, but you know, it's not the responsibility of their lawyer, nor is it their obligation, the lawyer's obligation, to fund the trust. The trust is prepared by the lawyer, but then it's up to the individual or family to go out and make sure whatever is going to be the subject of the trust is put into the trust. Because you could spend $999, $1,500, $2,000, $10,000 on an estate plan, and it's not worth the paper it's written on if there is absolutely nothing in the trust. It all goes through probate then. Had an interesting client some time ago who had a very, very, very large estate. And before her husband passed away, he had a very intricate estate plan done. And the husband passed away. I was asked to review the estate plan, and I found a multitude of documents in about a binder, yay thick. And the trust was completely unfunded, not funded. All the money spent for the trust was wasted because now, for reasons that I won't get into on this show, she had to have a new estate plan done, which could have easily been worked with had the trust been funded. It was never funded. So it wasn't of any value to her. So what we're going to try to talk about today, Rick, is how you fund your trust. We're going to talk about specific types of property, the ones that people are most concerned about, and then generally speaking, how you go ahead and fund it and make sure you're aware of how you do it so you can get this trust operational once you spend the money to have it done.
Okay.
So the first one we're going to talk about is personal property. Generally speaking, when we do a trust, we have a trust package. The trust package encompasses the living trust, and that could be anywhere from 20 to 30 to 40 pages. It has your powers of attorney for assets, your powers of attorney for health care, your health care directive, otherwise known as your living will, your pour-over will, your trust certification, and your assignment of personal property. And that document is contained in your trust package. It's basically an assignment that you sign, you execute, and it basically says, here's my personal property, here's who I want to leave it to. If you want to leave all of your general, if you want to leave all of your personal property generally to just your kids or whoever it might be that is designated as your beneficiary in your trust, then you just go by the way of the trust and have the property distributed equally, and you don't need to put anything on the assignment to personal property declaration. If you want specific stuff assigned to specific people, that's when you execute a personal property declaration, and you can add to that declaration as you go along. Once it's prepared, you can simply write in things and state what the item is and then indicate the name of the beneficiary who gets that piece of personal property. Either way, whether you do this personal property declaration or not, whether you fill it out or not, either way, it's contained in the trust, and either way, you sign an assignment of personal property indicating that that personal property is going to be distributed by way of the trust. So we're talking about two separate documents: the assignment, which you execute and make a part of the trust, so your personal property is distributed by way of the trust, and then you have a personal property declaration, which you can fill out or not fill out, to put specific beneficiaries who get specific pieces of personal property. If you don't fill it out, that's fine. It's just distributed by way of who the beneficiaries are in the trust.
Okay. All right. Well, that's pretty straightforward.
Pretty straightforward. But, you know, make sure you got, you know, I say that how straightforward that is, but, you know, you've got to, most of the times, this is the easiest thing to do, Rick, because while the attorney is there having the documents executed by the client, once the trust is prepared, that assignment to trust is part of the trust, and he ensures that it gets signed. So that's never really a problem. The problem lies for the client when they have to do the declaration. And again, they don't have to, but if they want to leave a special diamond ring to Joe Blow, and they don't say that, then that property is going to get distributed to the heirs named in the trust, not to Joe Blow necessarily. So if they want to leave the ring to Joe Blow, that's something they do on their own. They fill out the trust declaration, and they say 3-carat diamond ring to Joe Blow, and they're good to go.
Yeah, and you can always make an addendum to that declaration, too.
Right. You can keep filling it out as long as it gets. I mean, if you have that much personal property and those and that many beneficiaries, you're good to go. But usually the page that I provide has anywhere from 10 to 15 places on it for you to, you know, not a whole lot of people have more beneficiaries than that. But if you need it, all you do is copy that page while it's blank, and you just go on to page 2 if you need it. The next topic we're going to discuss is funding bank accounts or investment accounts. Remember that a bank account is just what it says. It's something that you have in the bank. An investment account is something you have with, you know, we've talked about one of our sponsors, Rick Regal at Edward Jones. Maybe you have investments at Dean Witter, Merrill Lynch, wherever it might be. You have investment accounts or bank accounts, and you go into the, let's take the bank account first. You go into the bank and you take a trust document. One of the trust documents that you have done for you is called the trust certification. Excuse me, that trust certification has all of the specifics, the important specifics about your trust. And it allows you to go in without bringing the entire trust document with you, because after all, that's private. You can bring in the trust certification. Most banks will take that and say, okay, we're going to change the name on your account from John Doe to John Doe, trustee of the Doe Family Trust, dated June 1st, 2015. Okay?
Okay.
So you can still sign your name on the account as John Doe, but now you've got the accounts put into the name of the trust, so whatever is in that account can pass by way of the trust, right?
Okay.
It's important. Some banks get a little technical with you and they say, no, we want to see the trust. Our legal department wants to see the trust. They have no business seeing that trust. However, they may say, and this doesn't happen too often, but some banks could get a little bit, you know, sticky and say, well, then our policy says we need to see the entire trust. And if you don't want to follow our policy, you can go do business at another bank. Well, then you tell them where they can put the trust certification and you go do business in another bank. That's what I would do.
Right.
Now, with the investment accounts, there's a letter that I prepare with my trust documents. I give to the client. It has the account number on it. The client takes it to the investment advisor. The investment advisor now has permission from the client to transfer the investment account into the name of the trust. Now, you may have a beneficiary named on this investment account, and that's fine. But I would name a secondary beneficiary, because in case that beneficiary passes, the money can then get distributed by way of the trust. The trust is going to be the secondary beneficiary entitled to those trust assets. Or you just simply put the name of the account in the name of the trust and you're good to go.
So what happens if, let's say you have a bank account or an investment account with a beneficiary on it, and then but on the trust you have somebody else assigned. Does one supersede the other, or is that immediately changed by somebody like you so it's reflected in the trust?
No, if you have a beneficiary, 9 times out of 10, if you have a beneficiary, let's say your spouse is the beneficiary of the investment account, more than likely your spouse is also going to be named in the trust. Okay, is going to be in the trust with you. It's going to be your family trust. If it's a sister, brother, friend, whatever, you name that person as a beneficiary. Many times people choose not to put it in the trust, but I would name a secondary beneficiary, meaning the trust, in case you want this money to in the investment account to go to Joe Blow and he's not in the trust. Put Joe Blow as the beneficiary, put the trust as a secondary beneficiary. So if Joe Blow passes away, it goes into the trust and then goes to the beneficiaries named in the trust.
Hmm. Okay.
Okay. That's what you do there. Now, let's go to the third item, and that would be IRAs. Most people know or should know that IRAs aren't necessarily placed in a trust. However, this goes back to what we were just speaking about in terms of investment accounts. Remember, qualified retirement accounts are usually ones involving some tax-deferred status, and normally you name a beneficiary on a 401k or an IRA or a Roth IRA. It doesn't go into the trust. You name the beneficiary so you can carry on that tax-deferred status, because once it goes into the trust, once money is placed into the trust, it could potentially be taxed. So you want to maintain that deferred status as long as you can, Rick. So again, on IRAs and 401ks, what I would do is I would not put those in the trust. They have their own beneficiaries. But I would name the trust as a secondary beneficiary in case, again, the beneficiary on the IRA or the 401k passes away. Then you have the trust as a backup. The money gets distributed by way of the trust, avoids probate, and it goes to the beneficiaries named in the trust as opposed to the deceased beneficiary, obviously.
So what's the advantage or disadvantage of doing it that way?
Well, the disadvantage of doing it that way is if you have a beneficiary on an IRA or a 401k and the beneficiary passes away and you don't make the change to a new beneficiary, then you've got the trust as a secondary beneficiary that automatically steps into the shoes of the deceased beneficiary. The trust then gets the assets when you pass, should you not replace the primary beneficiary who's deceased. And then, of course, because the trust as the secondary beneficiary gets the assets, then you avoid probate. Because you could have a pretty big 401k or a pretty big IRA, obviously.
Right. Okay. That makes sense.
And you certainly want it to go, you certainly want it to avoid probate. Before we go on and with the second half of the show, Rick, we have a special announcement to make, right? On a show that will be forthcoming here in the next few weeks. We have a special guest coming on, an attorney who talks about family business concepts, which I think is important to a lot of our viewers and listeners. And why don't you tell us a little bit about our special guest?
Well, we have Daphne Mallory, and she is a family business expert with the Daphne Mallory Company. Bill, I know you've done a little research on her, and you probably have a little bit more expertise in what she does. So I'll leave that to you to share with the audience here.
Yeah, she's going to talk about the benefits and a lot of the economical benefits that you can gain from having a family business. Now, of course, we've always professed on the show that we want to make sure that you have a business set up formally and that you just don't go willy-nilly into business with people that you normally feel you're safe with, like family members. But Daphne's approach is very unique and combines with mine. We're not saying that a family business shouldn't be set up formally. What we're going to talk about is the uniqueness about a family business and how it can prosper in the community and some of the advantages it has over a traditional business. So tune in. You'll see more announcements about that in the upcoming week or so. And please tune in for that show. And Daphne's appeared on, I believe, ABC, CBS. She's appeared on in a number of magazines as well. And we'll put out a little addendum to where you can click on a link and see some of the stuff that she's done in the past. I think you'll be impressed. So having said that, Rick, let's get back to the show. And we're talking about how to fund a living trust, something that, people sometimes neglect or forget about. And we talked about personal property. We talked about bank accounts and investment accounts. And then we last spoke about 401ks and IRAs and Roth IRAs. Now we're going to talk about real property. What you have to do is you have to transfer the property from the name of Rick Moscoso into Rick Moscoso, trustee of the Moscoso Family Living Trust, or the Rick and Tammy Moscoso, trustees of the Moscoso Family Living Trust, dated June 1st, 2015. You must file that deed. Use a grant deed typically, but you can use a quick claim deed if you're assured of the fact that there's no encumbrances on your property. And you can transfer that property into the name of the trust. California is a little bit unique. The deed has to be notarized. That's not unique. The deed has to be signed and notarized. But California has a preliminary change of ownership form that is filled out and must be filed with the county recorder's office with the deed. I perform the function of preparing the deed for my clients as well as the preliminary change of ownership form. It's all filled out, ready to go for them. All they have to do is take it down to the recorder's office and file it and pay the fee.
What happens in the case where, we list real property in the trust and we move, or an individual moves? Then what happens?
Well, then that property is no longer in the trust because it's no longer owned by you, and that means it's no longer owned by the trust if you have a revocable trust. And that's what we're speaking about here today. So how do you get that out of there? Before you sell the property to somebody, you will re-deed the property from the trust back into your own individual names. So it goes from the Rick and Tammy Moscoso Family Living Trust of June 1st, 2015 to Rick and Tammy Moscoso. You pay the fee, it gets changed back into your personal names, then you sell the property. Hmm. And then you're good to go. Now, what's really important here, Rick, and what some people don't always realize is whenever you transfer property to a new owner, there can be a reassessment of your property taxes. And as you all know, that can be pretty high. That does not happen when you deal with a living trust, okay, a revocable living trust. There is no resulting tax assessment that goes along with it. So when you transfer it from your name and your wife's name into the name of your trust as trustees, there's no tax reassessment on that. So you're not going to be worried about getting a higher or bigger tax bill. Because some people have done that, and people break up. You know, I know this happens a lot with boyfriends, girlfriends. They'll break up. They'll have property in their both of their names. They'll put it in one name. One person will buy out the other person, and that person who buys out the other person is going to get a tax reassessment because they're not related and they don't fit into one of the five or six categories or exclusions that will prevent a tax reassessment. And one of those exclusions is transferring the property into a living trust. The fifth area I want to talk about briefly is the area that combines business practice, business protection with estate planning, because now we want to fund a business interest into the living trust. And I think we should preface this by a couple of comments, Rick. Remember that when you have a revocable living trust, one that you can revoke at any time, and those powers are listed in the trust saying you can revoke it at any time. Whenever you have a revocable living trust, you do not have asset protection. Things can be reached that are in your trust. The purpose of a revocable living trust, unlike an irrevocable trust, is to provide you privacy and to avoid the probate issue. However, you can have asset protection, as we all know, by way of an LLC or an S corporation or a C corporation, and you can transfer those protected assets into the trust, and they remain protected by way of the company structure. They're not protected additionally by being in the trust. They're just placed in the trust so that the assets of that company at the proper time when you pass will be dispersed pursuant to the trust and not have to go through probate. Okay? So business interests can be transferred into the name of the trust. If you have units in an LLC, if you have stock shares in an S corp or a C corp, you endorse the shares or you do what's called a stock assignment, especially with a C corporation. You assign it from your name into the name of the trust. If you have LLC units, you can assign those units into the name of the living trust. If you assign an entire company that you own, if you own all the shares or all the units and you put the company into the name of the trust, anything the company owns, because it comes under the company umbrella and is protected by the company, will also be funded within the trust. So if you have an LLC and you own it all and you put the LLC in the living trust, any property the LLC owns will be funded into the trust as well. Okay, so these are very important issues that I think the last one specifically ties into some business asset protection overlapping with estate planning. And again, I've always said that a proper business lawyer should know both, should be able to deal with both as well as employment law to cover the full gamut of a practice that has the best interests of the small business entrepreneur at heart. And the transfer of these business assets are directly related to that interaction. But remember, you're also protecting assets in a way that is unique from what would typically be considered asset protection. When you put your assets in a trust, a revocable living trust, I just got done stating that you're not protecting them per se. But what are you shielding them from, in a manner of speaking? You're shielding them from the nasty probate court, the court that's going to come after your assets when you pass and take your money and attorney's fees and court costs and time spent. Yes, you're protecting, those assets are being protected in a manner of speaking after you pass by ensuring that your heirs, your beneficiaries, will get what you want them to get as opposed to the court and the attorneys getting their share. Make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about this in a previous episode. I can't remember when we did, but I know we did pretty much in depth about
avoiding probate.
Well, not only avoiding probate, but also really protecting your business assets. And that can be found in another episode.
Right.
That Bill spoke on before. So, folks, if you do have questions on how to do what Bill talked about today, how to fund your living trust, how to really address these 5 points that Bill spoke about today, please reach out to him. He is an expert at this. And what's the best way for our viewers to get a hold of you, Bill?
Bill at WFBLegalConsulting.com would be the email account. WFBLegalConsulting.com is the website, and the two phone numbers are both 949 area code 413-6535, the second number 698-6222. And please remember that you can go to the Bottled Business Sense bottlebusinesssense.com site. That's the newsletter site, bottlebusinesssense.com. And you can retrieve in the article in the April 2015 newsletter, you will see this item that we talked about today, how to fund a living trust, or do you have your fund trusted properly. You will see that there. You can read it. You can print it out. You can carry it with you and keep it in your file, whatever you want to do with it. It's there for your convenience.
Yeah.
And
if you want to review previous episodes relating to this topic, go to the bottlebusinesssenseshow.com, and you can click on any of the blog categories that are listed there, and those will pull up the episodes, past episodes, where Bill has talked about a little bit more specifically on how to protect your business assets.
And remember, you know, folks, I recently published an article on a number of social media sites on the things you want to look at when you're choosing a small business attorney. Remember that one of the things that I've always harped on is that you want to who can help you in your business. And in order to find a lawyer that can help you in your business, you want to find one who can be flexible on his or her fees, right? That's important. Well, because you're a lawyer and you graduate law school and you look at your diplomas on the wall, it's great to know the money because you worked hard and you think that you know generally what lawyers charge per hour, or for even flat rates. But that doesn't mean that you're immune from working with people, from making sure that you give them the benefit of your expertise, because that's going to single you out among other professionals. So find somebody. If it's somebody that you're comfortable with, fine. If not, find somebody. I pride myself on working with my clients and being able to give them the services that they can afford. And so that's important. Look at that article I published. I know it's out there on social media, and I believe it may even be in one of my newsletters that talks about what you need to look for when you hire a small business attorney. And secondarily, make sure he or she knows some of the principles about how to run your business. And that would include, in my personal humble opinion, estate planning, asset protection, and employment law. So I guess that without regurgitating all of our prior topics, Rick, I guess that does it for today's show. And we're looking forward to seeing everybody back next week, right?
Yeah, that's great. Well, we'll make it easy for our viewers and listeners, and we'll post that link that Bill just talked about underneath this video so you can go right to that article.
That's great. Thank you, Rick. That'll be very helpful for people, hopefully, and they'll be able to have access to it. Remember, folks, we provide free information. There's nothing like free. If you can get it and learn a little bit at the same time, that's our objective. So having said that, I look forward to seeing you next week and with my partner, Rick Moscoso, on the other end. Rick. And all our viewers and listeners have a prosperous week out there in the business community.
All right. Thanks for joining us again for this episode of the Bottle Business Sense Show, and we will see you again next week right here at 10 a.m. Take care.
Take care, everybody.